Sorry. Good morning. Great to see all of you today. Those were some wonderful songs that really helped prepare us for what our topic is today. So I'm glad you're here and we had that opportunity. Thank you. You didn't want to see me fall on my face? That's very kind. If you would, turn with me to Luke chapter 7. Luke 7. And are you ready to have some fun today? Okay, we're going to have a great time looking at a beautiful passage, one of my favorites in the whole Bible, back to back. So I don't say that every single week. There are some that I think are just incredibly applicable and powerful in an easy way for today, and that's definitely a passage that we're going to look at. So we're going to have some fun. We've been asking over the last couple of months this question, who is Jesus? And the expert historian Luke is answering that question for us by taking like a diamond and turning it again and again and again so we can get another glimpse of who Jesus is and what he does. So today we're going to look and peer in at who is Jesus relative to how he treats a social outcast and how he treats somebody in a religious establishment that might not have their heart in the right place. So that's what we're going to look at today as he interacts with two people, and I think we're going to have a great time doing it. So if you would, look at Luke 7, and we'll start in verse 36. One of the Pharisees asked him, that's Jesus, one of the Pharisees asked Jesus to eat with him, and he went into the Pharisee's house and took his place at the table. Eating in the ancient world was very symbolic, very important. It was more than just driving through and getting McDonald's and going home. It was a big deal. It was a way to show hospitality and care and give respect. And so the setting today is what you might picture a Thanksgiving banquet, a big meal where you've got the china out and all the family that you pretend you like once a year and that kind of thing, right? Don't pretend you don't do that. Okay? Everybody says you can pick your friends, but you're stuck with your family. So, that's sort of the setting here. It's a big, fancy banquet, and that's where Jesus is. Now, let's watch what happens. And behold, a woman of the city who was a sinner, when she learned that he was reclining at the table at the Pharisee's house, brought an alabaster flask of ointment. And standing behind him at his feet, weeping, she began to wet his feet with her tears and wiped them with the hair of her head and kissed her feet, his feet, and anointed them with the ointment. Now, this looks extremely bizarre and strange to us, right? Have you ever seen anybody do anything like that? Come in the middle of a meal and weep at somebody's feet and pour perfume on their feet. It seems very strange. But to this context, it would have seemed repulsive, not strange. So we're going to unpack why that is today. One of the key pieces to that is we've got to ask, who's this woman? Okay? Luke sort of gently tells us, but it's clear who she is. Was this gal particularly high, elite, moral, well-respected and thought of? Do you get that idea as we're reading it? No. What part of town is she from? Let me show you some pictures, see if that would help, okay? This is what I would imagine, if they had graffiti back then, what it might have looked like on the way to her house, okay? Now, we're speaking symbolically here, not literal, all right? And this was the area of town she was from. Go to the next one, would you? Okay. She's from the red light district, which is what? It's where the prostitutes live. Okay? This gal, Luke gently tells us, was a prostitute. Now, imagine that you're from a town of about 100 people, between 50 and 100 people, and you're a prostitute. Everybody is going to know the news about you and what you do, right? Everybody in the surrounding towns is going to know who you are and what you do. Now, for us, we might not talk about it in church, but it's common, it's normal in our culture to go to a bar, meet somebody, hook up, and go home the next day, act like nothing ever happened. That's normal. In this world, in the ancient world, that would have been abnormal. That was unacceptable for a Jewish woman to live her life that way. And yet, she did. So, anytime, I always hate it when the only time sermons are given about sex, they're always bad. And it's awful and horrible and negative. Is that a biblical view of sex? No. Who came up with the idea? All right? It wasn't like Adam and Eve just were bored, okay? And they figured something new out. God came up with the idea of sex. Sex is intended for procreation. It's intended for pleasure. And there's nothing evil, sinful, dirty, wrong, ungodly about it, right? What is the problem then? The problems are too many for us to come up with. It's the illustration I love the best is sex is like a fire. If you have it in the fire pit, everybody likes to stare at it. That might not be the best analogy. If you have it in the fire pit, then it's good for its purpose, right? That's better. But what happens if the fire gets out of the fire pit? Has anybody's house burned down here? I'm just curious. Yes. Your house burned down what, about 6 months ago? And how was that experience?
Stressful.
That's a very mild word for it. All right, it was upheaval. Your whole family had to move, live somewhere else.
Twice?
Had to move twice or burn down twice? Okay. Move twice, move back in. So it was a huge ordeal. All right. Fire, when it gets out of the place it's supposed to be, is destructive. It's awful. It's horrible. That's the same thing what happens with sex. When we take it out of the bounds in which God's placed it, then all it does is cause problems. Huge problems. So this woman has taken something that is pure, wonderful, lovely, intended for good, and she's done what with it? Because of the vileness of men, if it wasn't for men, she wouldn't have had this opportunity. But because of the sinfulness of men in her culture, she was able to turn something beautiful into something disgusting, something awful, something horrible. So it's interesting that she's at the meal, and we're going to talk about why that's so interesting in a second. But look at the attitude of one of the people there at the party. Look at verse 39. Now when the Pharisee who had invited him saw this. So this is the guy's house, okay? When the Pharisee who had invited him saw this, he said to himself, if this man were a prophet, he would have known what sort of woman this is who's touching him. For she is a sinner. So what's he saying? Behind what he's saying, what's his worldview about how holy people act? You don't associate with them. What else? You certainly don't let those kinds of people touch you, right? Now, why would that be? You're going to end up like them. Okay? So that's what's behind his worldview here, is to live a holy life, you have to separate yourself from everything evil. That thought is still around today, right? Okay, now that was the Pharisee's mentality. Now, I don't think you can get this at all unless we try and walk through it. So I need some volunteers. Okay? I need a Jesus. Who wants to be Jesus? No? Aaron? All right, Aaron, come on up. I have no idea why they picked you. Oh, that Aaron. No, you're already up. Come on. Come on. Come on. You can do it. And we'll use you too. Come on. And then we need a gal with long hair. All right? Amber, come on up. Okay? And then we need a couple people to be in the crowd. Who will be the crowd for us? All right? Come on. A couple more. Come on. All right. You ready? Okay. In the ancient world, if you were going to have a banquet at your house, guess what you did? You invited people, but you left the door open. Okay? This was a social thing. You were seen as somebody of status, if you accepted people into your home. So what would happen is you'd have your actual people who were invited and are at the meal, and then you had this other group in the background that were just hanging out watching. So that's weird, isn't it? I mean, imagine doing that at your house. So that's what's happened. This gal has not been invited, right? She's just wandered in. So let's see if we can figure this out. Okay. Now, they didn't sit at tables. They laid at tables. Okay? So I need you to do a couple things for me. All right? I'd like you to take off your shoes and...
I got boots on.
I don't care. And lay. You can do it. Okay? And Aaron, you're going to be Simon. All right? Yes, you have to take off your socks. Yep, over here, shoes and socks off. Yep, right over here. Okay? And then you, all you four back here.
I'm going to be sorry you volunteered.
Okay? All right. Dude, have you watched those things recently? All right, so... here's what they would do. They would lay down and rest themselves on an arm and eat with the other hand. Okay? So can you picture this? So if you could lay down, prop yourself.
So they can picture it fine.
No, they can't. Do it. Okay? So your feet are actually behind you. All right? That's good. All right? And you're on that side. So Jesus and Simon are hanging out. They're having the meal. Okay? They look comfortable, don't they? Now, can you get a pillow? No. Okay, come here. So, imagine they're eating. Okay? And we're making fun of this, but this would have been a real big deal for Simon. Because who's he got in his house? Jesus, okay? This is the guy for months we've been studying who's been, he's the superstar, right? He's healing people. He's just raised a dead guy. He's teaching life-changing truth. So, in the middle of this meal, what happens? In comes this nasty, vile woman. Right? And she kneels at his feet. And I want to see you kiss him. No, I'm kidding. You don't have to really kiss him. Okay? Why is she crying? Why is she crying? Okay? She's overcome with emotion. Right? She's weeping. She's kissing his feet. His feet would have not been clean. And what else is happening? Okay? She's wiping his feet with her hair. Now that seems gross to us, but they would not have thought gross. Here's what they would have thought. If you were a woman and you wanted to make it very clear that you were moral, that you were faithful, that you were devoted, that you didn't sleep around. Do you know what you did with your hair? You kept it up. It was up on your head. It was like a wedding ring. Okay? So this woman's got her hair where? It's down. Why? She's lived a lifestyle of immorality. So to Simon, what's he thinking? She's grotesque. What sort of woman is he just letting him do that? Now, we're going to find out from the text in just a second that Jesus hasn't even looked at her. He's just allowing her to do this. And what's Simon thinking? What's he doing? I mean, his jaw has hit the floor, right? He's disgusted. That's pretty good. Now, look and we'll see what happens next. Verse 40. Jesus, answering, said to him, "Simon, I have something to say to you." And he answered, "Say it, teacher." A certain moneylender had two debtors. One owed 500 denarii and the other 50. When they could not pay, he canceled the debt of both. Now, which of them will love him more? Simon answered, "The one, I suppose, for whom he canceled the larger debt." And he said to him, "You've judged rightly." Then turning to the woman, apparently for the first time, he turns to the woman and he says to Simon, "Do you see this woman? I entered your house. You gave me no water for my feet. But she has wet my feet with her tears and wiped them with her hair. You gave me no kiss, but from the time I came in, she's not ceased to kiss my feet. You did not anoint my head with oil, but she's anointed my feet with ointment. Therefore, I tell you, her sins, which are many, are forgiven, for she loved much. But he who is forgiven little, loves little." And he said to her, "Your sins are forgiven." So let's give them a hand, and then we'll unpack this. Please put your shoes back on. Okay, she took perfume and did what with it? Okay, she poured it on his feet. Now, let's talk about perfume for a minute. I did some research on perfume this week. You hear that a lot, don't you? Okay? The idea we get here is that this perfume was very expensive, that it was a very worthwhile possession that she had. And there is a perfume called, I think we have a picture of it, called Joy Perfume. All right? This is the only one I can pronounce. This is the third most expensive perfume in the world this year. It cost $800 for 1 ounce. They take 10,000 jasmine flowers and 28 dozen roses to make it. Okay, $800. Now the next one is called Hermes Perfume, 24. It costs $1,500 for 1 ounce. Okay? Now, the last one is called Clave Christian Imperial Perfume. All right? Now, what do you think that costs? $215,000 for that bottle. Now, what kind of person would wear that? It's somebody that's wanting to communicate something, right? Okay. It's opulence. It's wealth. It's status. That's the only people that wear that kind of stuff, right? Now, in the ancient world, why would this woman have wore perfume? How often did she take a shower? Never. Never. How often did she turn on the sink or fill up the tub? Never. Okay? So she's struggles to keep herself clean, hygienically. So what does she need the perfume for? It's a tool of her trade, right? So what does her taking that perfume and pouring it on Jesus signify? Have you ever thought of this way? She's taking the very thing that she used to use for sin and is now turning it into lavish worship. What is she saying by pouring it out? She's saying, "I don't need this anymore." She's saying, "I'm done with this. I've seen my last customer. You have changed me." She's pouring out her most prized personal possession because she doesn't need it anymore. Isn't that beautiful? Isn't that amazing? I used to have this idea that when I was a kid, especially, that this passage was like, this was the first time she'd ever heard of Jesus. And she just showed up and was so moved by watching them eat that she gave up her perfume. But that doesn't make any sense. She would have been watching Jesus. She would have seen him heal people. She would have heard him talk about this idea of, I'm bringing a kingdom that never ends. And I can forgive you, and you can join in and be a part of it. So, prior to her ever walking in this house, she's already a follower of God. She's already turned her back on her trade. She's already found new life in God. And so Jesus, as she pours out the perfume, he pronounces on her, you're forgiven. What you've done is right. Now, did her actions save her? Is that what made her right with God? No. Now, how do we know that? Well, look at the end of this setting. Those at the table with him began to say among themselves, this is verse 49, who is this who forgives sin? And he said to the woman, your faith has saved you. Go in peace. So she's been saved because of her faith in Jesus and in what Jesus had done and was going to do and the message that he was giving for her. It's just an astonishing story. And so Jesus does what? He just receives the worship. He receives the acceptance. He receives her saying, I'm done with that old life. Now, what about Simon? What's Simon's role in this story? To him, who was far from God? The woman who'd taken a beautiful thing and used it for evil. But in reality, what we're finding in the story is that Simon did not give Jesus the normal, customary respects. There were three things that he listed. I don't know if you caught them. All of them will seem odd and strange and different to us because we don't greet each other this way. When we walk into one another's homes, I've never a single time had somebody ask me, can I wash your feet for you? Okay? We don't do that. That was the first sign of respect and care when you walked into somebody's home. What was the next? Did you pick up on it? Okay, it was a kiss. Now guys, if I ever come to your house and one of you men kisses me, we're going to have a problem. But this was a sign of honor. And the last was oil for the head. Now, they would pour oil, ointment, on each other's heads to show honor, dignity, care, respect, because they were hot and dry and dusty. But did Simon do any of those things? No. Why? Well, the story tells us that he didn't do any of them. Let's come back to that in a second. What, by contrast, what did the woman do? She washed his feet with her emotion. She kissed not his head, but his feet. She poured out not cheap olive oil, but she poured out $215,000 perfume on his feet. Why? What's the big difference between these two people? Well, one of them understands who she is. The other doesn't. One of them understands forgiveness and grace and love. The other doesn't. One of them had Jesus in their home for their own sake. The other, when they heard Jesus was there, ran to come just for the opportunity to express honor, love, care, devotion, respect. The difference is one understands what they've been forgiven of. The other doesn't. She pours out the perfume because she doesn't need it anymore. So Jesus says, your faith has saved you. Go in peace. Now, the implications of this passage, I think, are absolutely tremendous. Who do we see in this passage that Jesus is? He's the forgiver. He's the one who can take a person who was up to their eyeballs in sin, down to the very core of how they existed. And he could turn them into somebody that he receives worship from. that astonishing? Astonishing. He is God who accepts you no matter what you've done. No matter how far you've gone. No matter what you've done that you hope no one else ever knows about. If you will come in faith and repentance and turn to Him, believe in the gospel, and He'll radically change you. And He'll tell you, what's the greeting, the sending away, the benediction, if you will, go in peace? What is He saying to her? He's saying to her, you've lived under wrath, condemnation, judgment, discipline, but now you can run free. You have peace with God. You have peace with me. That's who Jesus is. Now, what about the Simons? If Simon's attitude is your attitude, if the woman's actions repel you, if you're grossed out that your Jesus would allow a woman like that to worship Him, then Jesus is not saying to you, go in peace. Because you have yet to find the peace and fulfillment from God. Imagine a church family of former prostitutes who now spend their life worshiping Jesus lavishly. Obviously, I don't mean prostitutes literally, although that's fine. But imagine a setting where everyone understood how awful their former life had been and how much they did not deserve the grace and love and acceptance and forgiveness of God, but found it through Jesus. And where coming to a service isn't about a duty to fulfill, it's about an eager opportunity to pour out what you used to use in sin as an offering of worship. Wouldn't that be incredible? Wouldn't that be amazing? That'd be awesome. That's what God wants. That's who He's looking for. It's people that understand who they are, what they've done, but who Jesus is and what He's done for them. And as a result, who they now are. The sad part of this story is not what the woman had done. The sad part of the story is what Simon was doing. We're surrounded by a world of people up to their eyeballs in sin. And what the world needs is not Simons who think they're better, who think their sin of judgmentalism is somehow less offensive to God than sleeping with a different man every night. It's not. Both are a foul stench to God. What we need are people that are enveloped by grace. Because then, how do we treat other people? We rejoice when we see them worship. So I want to challenge you to look into your heart. Which one are you in this story? Are you the woman who realizes the depths of your sin and you're pouring out your life as worship? Or are you Simon who thinks he's better, is judgmental, and as a result, shoves Jesus out? If you're the second, even you can become first, right?